Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my friend Bob Dio on the other side of the glass in our state-of-the-art spaceship control room. Bob Dio, engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, February the 8th. We are live from Tucson's trusted local news and talk station 1030 The Voice. Our media partners, I want to do a quick shout-out on Friday, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan Smith is with us in studio, the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thank you very much. I'll say it to you in person. Thanks for your support.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, thanks to our friends down there for their support, Dan Shear and his team. Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Joe Ferguson is with us as well. Joe is the political writer, one of the political writers for the Arizona Daily Star. Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. And our Friday Focus interview today, State Senator Dr. Randy Freese, Democrat representing Legislative District Number 9. Dr. Freese is the State Senate Minority Leader. Dr. Freese, how are you?
Great, Bill. Still in the House, though.
Oh, what am I talking about? Senate, yes. I'm talking about the House Minority Leader.
He hasn't termed out and made the big move yet.
That's right.
No, I just gave you a nice little, I don't know if you get more money in the Senate.
Oh, no, it's all the same.
Yeah. It's the same $1.98 a day up at the House. How are things progressing in the House? We had Senator Mesnard on the program last week, and he was all excited about this, that the tax, the chain, all this dust up over the tax forms
the conformity,
and everything that I think the public really can't get a handle about what's going on. He was excited that they were going to move forward. Then an hour after the program, the governor vetoed.
Right. So, well, because of water, the DCP, the drought contingency plan, as well as the conformity issue in the House, we've been moving rather slowly. We're very grateful to have the DCP plan get to a point where we met some consensus. My caucus pushed very hard for a nod towards conservation. Not only do we need to mitigate those who will experience some of the cuts, mostly Pinal County agriculture, but we need to make sure we understand that we need to start conserving and looking for more efficient ways to have our farmers utilize their water and make sure the public understands, we're in a position where we need to start being smart about our water usage. And we got that, and we were able to get some funding for conservation, so the Democrats all got on board with the DCP, and now it's up to all the side agreements to get done before Commissioner Berman is happy.
So should folks worry about filing their taxes, or is there going to be some kind of a once this is all settled, will there be some kind of, will the State Revenue Department have a revised form, or should people worry about that? I mean,
so,
it's tax season.
Very, very, yeah. Very good questions, yeah. Questions that we've been exploring with the DOR and the director. Right now, the director of Department of Revenue is acting under guidance from the executive to assume full conformity. That way, that's what the forms are reflected. Eventually, when we do pass something, there will be a retroactive date, meaning that it won't necessarily need an emergency clause, although an emergency clause is always good to have on these types of measures. But, if we do get to the point where we get a piece of legislation out saying conformity, then the taxpayer should be fine.
All right, let's bring in Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com.
That prompts a question from me. So if, say, filing now would favor you as an individual or a business in Arizona, should you be getting in your taxes now under what's going on? Or should you wait and kind of see what happens? I mean, what would be in someone's personal interest when it comes down to that individual taxpayer who doesn't want to give you guys any money?
Well, I mean, I think that the issue that Senator Mesnard had about, conforming the way the governor wishes us to is that although your federal, depending on your income tax bracket, although your federal income tax is going to be less, the state income tax, in fact, may be more. Still expect to see a net increase in your tax, you know, what you're getting back from your income taxes. But I don't think that timing of when you file your state is going to matter, because if we do something and Senator Mesnard gets his way, then you'll eventually get your money back. If we conform, then you're going to be paying.
Then it'll be the same as right, if you exactly, do it right now.
Right.
So the whole issue, so that people understand what's going on, is the state generally makes its income taxes conform with the federal tax system. We start that's kind of like the basis for what you pay taxes on when you go and file, to make things much easier, so you don't have to go through filling out two completely different systems, right?
Mostly it has to do with where we start and define your income, and yeah, we conform to that, and that's what we normally do. And then there are many, and then of course the standard deduction. And in the past, we've always conformed to that. Now that is going up with the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, right? That has gone up from $6,000 to $12,000. With the whole idea of fewer people will itemize, it'll be simpler.
But there are some other deductions that are going away, and some people are seeing some serious, rather unexpected income tax hits, the mortgage interest deduction, things like that.
Well, Dylan, as you bring up, so in the past, Arizona has had conformity with very specific exemptions. Medical is a very prominent one.
Yeah.
In federal, you can only deduct what's above $10,000. Arizona lets you deduct every dollar. So that's just one example of where we didn't really conform, but it was a very specific example. So in most places we conformed, and we had a few specific examples where we didn't. Now I believe the governor wants us to either continue that practice or conform completely, and that's where the uncertainty comes in. Most people agree it will be an increase in revenue for Arizona. We just don't know how much, anywhere from $50 million to $250 million. And there's just so much uncertainty that I agree with Governor Ducey. We shouldn't conform. We should conform. We shouldn't try to make it a neutral hit at this point until we know exactly what we're dealing with.
State Representative Randy Fries is with us in studio. It's our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. With me, Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star and Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. And Joe, you're up to the plate.
I just want to get a better sense about this. You know, why are we dealing with this in February? I mean, I think there's a lot of people that are going to be angry at the idea that the legislature is doing this now. You know, why wasn't this an issue in January? Why are we hearing about it after the elections? You know, who really dropped the ball on this, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think it probably is a little bit of everyone up at the Capitol. Every year we do a conformity vote. It's usually in February, and it's a very mundane bill where we change the dates and say we conform to the federal tax code except for these things from these dates. Normally do it every February. Last February when we did this, I voted no because I said we have more work to do. We have they had just passed in December 2017. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and I say we have more work to do. Let's get ahead of this work. Let's go ahead and conform for last tax year, but let's look forward to next tax year and see what we need to do. And we didn't do anything. We simply let it lie there, and the election may have had something to do with it. The governor was asked during the election cycle, what do you think about this? And I think he was successful at being fairly non-specific about what his plans were, but once he got reelected, it became very clear that he wishes to conform. And as I said, that will increase states' revenues by some number. We just don't know what.
Take a break right here. Dylan, what time is it for? What am I going to talk about? What do you think?
I'm going to go way out on a limb here and say you're going to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery.
That's my favorite bakery in town. Mona's Danish Bakery on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle. This would be a great time to stop by Mona's. Dr. Fries, I know you eat healthy, you're a physician, but let's be honest here. You do like bakery goods.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Sometimes you need to feed the soul.
I mean, exactly. This would be a great time to stop by Mona's, have lunch. The bread on that your sandwich will be served will be, I'm sure, came out of the oven just a few hours ago. And Joe, do you want to weigh in as well? You've had a few bakery goods in your day, haven't you?
Once or two. And, you know, I got to say that now that I've had the Kringle, I'm a fan.
Yeah, the Kringle. We not only did one Kringle here, Dr. Freeze, at the holiday time. It went in about 10 minutes. We brought another one in, and it went like faster than the first one. Anyway, monasdanishbakery.com, the website for Mona's. Also, you can go to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link not only to Mona's, but all of our great sponsors. Randy Freeze, the State House Minority Leader, sticks around for another segment, as does Joe Ferguson from The Star and Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. The program is Buckmaster on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk, coming up exactly at 12:15. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It's Buckmaster on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Our Friday Focus interview today, State Representative Randy Freeze. He represents, as a Democrat, District 9, which is basically the Tucson area. He is also the State House Minority Leader. Also with me in our still new studios, kind of still have that new studio smell. Joe Ferguson is here from the Arizona Daily Star and Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Let's see how much ground we can cover in the next 15 minutes or so. Matt, though, has been waiting on the live line at 790-2040. Matt, what's on your mind? You want to stay on taxes?
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but this issue is just got to be beaten. I do not understand why the Democrats want to assist strategically Governor Ducey on this issue, because basically they're bailing out the governor because he never had the money for the 2020. They've been sitting on several surpluses, the Republicans, that they've been holding on to, that the money was never used for anything, just so they could build a surplus. And if any Democrat had bothered to show up to the State of the Union in Tucson with the chamber, they would know that the governor's strategic plan, he wants to simply take all that money and build a $1 billion surplus.
Okay, so, Matt, now let's hear what Dr. Freeze has to say to your comment.
Thank you, Matt. Just number one, when the governor gave the same state of the state up at the Capitol, we were all there for that. When he came down to Tucson, we were up at the Capitol working. So I really would have loved to come down, but I was stuck up in Phoenix. And I agree with you, Matt. I think the governor's goal is to establish a large surplus at the end of the year so he can say, you know, look how well I'm doing the economics of the state. That's why I think it's not that we are aligning with the governor. We all voted no on conformity because we felt that there's too much uncertainty to try to navigate a revenue-neutral solution to what the federal government has done to our state revenues with their changes.
Is anything really getting done other than this tax thing and the water thing? What about education? It was the marquee issue last year. I don't hear anything about it right now.
I think it's still going to be a big thing this year. One of the things moving through this year is, you know, we have $1 billion, $1.1 billion surplus this year, if you will, $900 million one-time spending, meaning we can invest that in one-time issues, $200 million or so ongoing, meaning we can create some ongoing programs if we think that's best. Education is in the forefront because we have to meet the promises of the teacher raises, but also there's a $930 billion back payment that is due to our schools, and we're having discussions about paying that down versus giving our schools a cash infusion. So should we pay down our debt to the schools and let them come current on their books, or do we need to give them, I believe we need to give them a cash infusion so they can address one-time needs like new computers, new software, new textbooks. If we just pay down our debt to them, that doesn't result in infusion of cash that they can use to solve their current problems.
Here's Joe Ferguson of the Star.
Well, let's just talk a little bit more about that. You know, you say about a $1 billion surplus, but there's some creative book cooking going on right now in terms of delaying payments to show where our debt is. So, you know, is it really a $1 billion surplus, or is that some creative bookkeeping at the end of the day?
No, there is a $1 billion that we have to spend in this budget, $900 million one time and $200 or so million ongoing projected. So, but yes, there have been prior gimmicks, budget gimmicks that allow us to that allowed us to roll over 3 months of payments to our schools. So we paid them a month late three times. And that's happened over the past 10 years since the recession started. So that's what that $930 million rollover payment is. We did the same thing to the universities. A couple of years ago, we owed them $250 million, and we put that in a budget two or three years ago to bring them current. So the argument right now is, do we pay our schools so they can come current on their debts, pay off their short-term warrants and loans, or do we infuse some fresh cash so they can invest in one-time needed projects to solve their problems? You know, it's a hard decision to make. When you look at the supporters of the bill that signed in, everybody says, this is a good idea, I support it. But then when you ask them, what's the priority, they start to say, we need cash. So it's up to us, the legislators, to make the difficult decision and say, maybe we shouldn't pay back $300 million this year. Maybe we should pay back $150 million and take $150 million and accelerate the restoration of the district of digital assistance, which is money that goes right into the classroom.
Dylan Smith from the Sentinel.
A big chunk of that money will be, at least supposedly under what's been planned, money to go for teacher raises, to fulfill those promises that were made with so much fanfare last year. The first raise, the first portion of that pay bump got funded, but there's still more money that's needed, right?
Well, yes, there's another pay increase happening this year, so some of that money will need to go towards that. Of course, that needs to be ongoing, right?
Is it guaranteed, that pay rate, the pay?
Well, it must be. You can't call it a raise otherwise, okay. Right? A raise all means right. Every year you're going to get that.
I just wanted to make sure.
Well, if the legislature doesn't fund it, then it doesn't happen, though.
I think that makes it a priority for us to fund, right? The governor, I think his new phrase is promises made, promises kept. I don't know if you've heard that yet, but that's what his budget push has been. You know, and in his State of the State speech, he had a lot of good things. In 2017, he made a State of the State speech that got me on my feet and clapping, right? Mm. But he had no money behind it, and that was the big problem. That's how we landed with Red for Ed. There was a 1% raise. 1% raise, I think it was. We had Red for Ed. Suddenly, it was a 20 by 2020. This year, he made a good speech, and we actually have money to put behind it. But he is proposing $500 and some million deposit into the rainy day fund, which is like our savings account. If we do $500 million in that, $300 million in debt payments, that leaves $100 million for one-time expenditures. I don't think that's the wisest way to spend our money this year when we have to restore and reinvest and reverse those cuts that we've made in the past.
So sure. Our caller, Matthew, raised the point of strategy and the Democrats in the legislature sort of aligning with what the Republican governor is saying. It's kind of a shift coming from Ducey as he begins his second term, isn't it? This is a guy who got elected on a promise to try and eliminate the state income tax, or at least get it as close to zero as possible. And here he's vetoing a bill that would essentially be a tax cut, even if his party doesn't want to call it that.
I think Matt is very smart in recognizing that if we conform, that money is not spent in this budget. Where is that money going to be? It's going to be at the balance sheet at the end. So if we get $250 million because we conformed, it's going to be left over at the end. It's going to make that number bigger. And then Mr. Ducey's going to come back and say it's time to reduce income tax.
It's 10:30. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. State Representative Randy Fries is here. He is the State House Minority Leader. He represents District 9 in Tucson. He's our Friday Focus interview. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. Joe Ferguson from the Arizona Daily Star. Gentlemen, do you have any more on education, or can I switch topics?
Take it away.
Thank you very much. Texting, what about it? Will there be a law to prohibit texting by motorists in Arizona, Randy Fries?
Hopefully. Let me just say I am the assistant leader. I keep forgetting to remind
assistant.
You.
Okay.
But hopefully this year, Senator Farley, my ex-seatmate, who was working on this for many, many years, 11, 12 years, hopefully we'll be able to pull this through this year with the momentum of the officer that was unfortunately killed recently while at the roadside from a driver who was texting. His mother was up lobbying for the bill. We also have a local hero here, Brandon Lyons, who was hurt on a bicycle, and he started stop, take a look, something like that, an organization to make sure that bicyclists are recognized on the roadways. We have a lot of momentum here. We have a lot of people signed in to support that bill, and I'm very hopeful. I'm including President Fan. I'm very hopeful that this will move forward this year.
Joe Ferguson, where do you want to take this conversation?
I just want to go back for a moment. As the assistant minority leader, you guys made some gains in the House, and that's great when you get votes on the floor, but there's still the problem of whether or not the bills you need and the legislation you want to vote on is ever going to make it to the floor. So that hasn't changed, has it?
You know, unfortunately, it is still business as usual. I was at the speaker's desk just yesterday saying, why aren't you first reading our bills? I have commitments from committee chairs to hear my caucus members' bills, and they haven't been first read. So, yes, they're operating as business as usual on that aspect. The other thing, and we had talked about briefly about how things are moving so slowly in the House. One of the reasons why things are moving slowly is we cannot have a floor action if even one of their members is missing.
Why is that?
Because that means there's 30, and you need 31 to pass something. And even if one of their members is missing, we won't be voting.
And wasn't there something about limiting how much time? It used to be you could talk for, 5 minutes? Now it's down to 30 seconds.
It's 3 minutes. So you're absolutely right. One of the first things the Republican leadership did this year with their 31 majority was to squeeze down on the time limits on speaking on the floor.
What's that about?
Well, 1947 was the first time the limitations were considered. There's 60 members in the House, twice as many than the Senate. Usually we're not as experienced. You know, the Senate tends to be where the House members go to. So we're a little bit, you know, more robust and verbose. In 1947, they put together the five limitation and 10 limitations on explaining your votes and talking about your bills and amendments. There has never been limits on question answering. Now there's a limit on answering a question in 3 minutes. That was always unlimited. And in 1947, when the House considered this, they wrote a letter to the Attorney General and said, do we have the authority to do this? And the Attorney General said, of course you do. You could govern yourselves. So they decided to screw the limits down tighter on us simply because we talk too much.
The Senate doesn't have a similar
They don't have any limits in the Senate.
Why?
Well, there's half as many of them.
Well, all right.
I don't, you know, maybe.
Again, I want to change gears because I've got about 5 minutes and I've got a stack of stuff still I want you to weigh in on. A bill that would ban early ballot drop-off at the polls. Randy Fries, a lot of people like to take their early ballot. For one reason or another, they haven't mailed it in and suddenly it's election day. So what do? They go by and they go by a polling place and they drop off their ballot.
They drop it off, yes.
That may be prohibited in the future.
That's a Senate bill. And again, I think it's trying to resolve a problem that I don't think is a big problem. And you described it. It's called the late early ballot. You get your ballot by mail and you hold on to it, and you take your time, and you research, and you decide, I want to make sure I fill out my ballot with a lot of intention and thoughtfulness, and then you miss the deadline to mail it. You know, if you don't mail it by X date, you can't. Right. It might likely not be counted, so you drop it off, and it becomes a late early. Now, those aren't counted on election days. They frequently take several days afterwards to count. We had very close elections, and that's when those ballots really become meaningful, when you have a close election.
But, you know, people are so want to be instantly gratified and know who won on election night. When it comes down to it, legally, the election is not over until the fourth Monday after Election Day. That's when the election is canvassed. That's when we legally know who officially, I'm using some air quotes there, won the election.
Correct.
And that's barring any challenges. You know, there is no legal rush to try and figure out who won on election night. Certainly as journalists and people who are heavily invested in politics want to know.
Well, I mean, you're identifying...
Does it matter? As long as we know that December 4th or whatever it ends up being?
Well, Dylan, you're identifying what appears to be a problem, and it's not really a problem until you have a close election and the media is saying, we still don't know. Well, as you indicated, the canvass is the official date of knowing the results. But most of the time, you don't need the canvass when you have a candidate who's got a generous lead, if you will.
But that's what's being used to motivate this particular piece of legislation by the Republicans.
Right.
That
yes.
We need to know and need to know quickly what the results are.
I would rather have faith that the election was done fairly and counted properly and wait a little bit longer to know the results.
Here's Joe Ferguson of the Star.
Doctor, they've been pushing for a national voting holiday. Do you have concerns that this really benefits the people that they're trying to get to the polls, or is this just another banker's holiday?
I guess voting should be made easier and not more difficult. I think having the voting on the Tuesday that we usually have it on, with requirements that people be allowed to leave the workplace to vote, assurances that they can do that. You know, I don't know a whole lot about that concept, but that I think that we should be focusing on getting ballots, making it easier to get your ballot in. If we go to an all mail-in ballot, then it wouldn't matter what day that election is. So I would lean towards something like that rather than having a holiday.
But you, as a doctor, you wouldn't get the day off. Your nurses wouldn't necessarily get the day off. People that, you know, you are serving that work in retail jobs wouldn't get the day off, right?
Well, there are requirements that people be allowed access to the polling place, and there are also options. The, you know, someone who feels, as everyone should, strongly about voting, they have options. They can get on the Pebble, they can get their ballot, they can go to early polling places. There are many options, right? If you like to go to the polling place, you can early vote at several polling places throughout your city or state, and you know, think about getting your vote in and planning for it is probably responsible.
I know I'm up against a break, but it's my show, so I'm going to keep it for about a minute here because I think this is important. At least it's very important. I know Pima County's been watching how all this will go. Representative Noel Campbell, your colleague from Prescott, he's a Republican, but he did propose increasing the gas tax and vehicle fee plan that would pay for transportation infrastructure. The gas tax, Dr. Freeze, would go up from the current 18 cents per gallon to 43 cents per gallon in 2021. That 18 cents per gallon is one of the lowest state gas taxes in the United States.
That's correct. It is one of the lowest. And currently, I think the bill has been amended to be 5 cents a year for the next 5 years to eventually reach the 43 cents. Arizona hasn't raised its gas tax for over 20 years, I believe. We also have, you know, cars that are more fuel efficient, that are using less gas and paying less at the pump. And the gas tax is designed to help our infrastructure and keep our roads repaired and highly travelable, you know, highly safe as we travel. This is a bill that is working its way slowly through the system. It has already gone through one committee and come out of that committee with enough votes to continue. It's set for another committee meeting next Wednesday morning. If it comes out of that committee meeting, then it'll be floor eligible, and it'll be up to the speaker to put it on a floor calendar for us to debate it and vote on it. And then, of course, it has the same hurdles over in the Senate. So it's got a long way to go.
And, Dylan, it would require a lot of votes.
Yeah, we have the provision in the Arizona State Constitution where if you guys want to raise taxes and actually call it a tax increase, which this would most certainly be, you have to have a two-thirds vote in both houses, right?
Well, that's 40 members. I'm sorry. Yeah, 40 members in the House and I think 20 in the Senate. Yeah, two-thirds vote for a tax increase, correct.
All right, State Representative Randy Freeze, let's see if I can finally get your title right, Assistant Minority Leader for the Arizona House of Representatives. Dr. Freeze, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Good discussion today. We appreciate it. Coming up next, the Reporters Roundtable portion of our program. That means that Joe Ferguson of The Star and Dylan Smith of Tucson Sentinel stick around. We'll talk about some of the big stories that are happening or have happened this week and might be happening next week. So that's coming up next on Buckmaster on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Hi, Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It's the roundtable portion of the Buckmaster Show, and in the next 10 minutes, Town Hall in Green Valley with Steve Bannon, some development on the U.S. Senate race on the Dem side, and the Pima County Road plan, proposed plan. Let's see if we can get all three of those items in with our panelists, Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com, and Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star. Let's begin, Joe, with the Town Hall in Green Valley with a gentleman who you don't hear that much about anymore, Steve Bannon. Why is there a town hall in Green Valley? What's the bottom line, sir?
So after the State of the Union, this group announced that they were going to hold a meeting in Tucson to discuss their efforts to build a wall privately. And that has kind of disintegrated down from Tucson to Sarita, from a open town hall to a relatively closed town hall. So this, like many of Steve Bannon's kind of proposals, gets a lot of attention in certain circles online, but the reality is something very different.
Dylan, would you like to say anything about this?
Well, we will see what happens tonight, how many people show up, how many people are actually allowed in, and even before we get to the meat of what that discussion turns out to
be. Is it close to the media?
Well, we've been told yes and no, and it kind of goes back and forth. So, you know, certainly this hasn't been the most well-organized of events, but a lot of political events do, you know, kind of run that way.
The venue,
I'm more interested in, it's going to be at Quail Creek at the clubhouse,
seating,
so it's in a gated community,
yeah, okay.
So they're able to control,
yeah,
you know, who even gets within a mile of the place. It's such a, you know, tilting at windmills effort to try and build a private border wall. You know, Arizona tried this to at least raise money,
sure,
through the state to give to the feds, and, you know, fell sadly
what
short
happened?
Of their goal.
Whatever happened to that and the people that sent money in?
To the state of Arizona?
Yeah.
They ended up distributing, what did they raise, like $750,000 or something out of the $20 million or whatever they wanted. They gave it, I think, to the Cochise County Sheriff's Department and some other law enforcement agencies eventually. But this event is sort of an outgrowth of the effort, the GoFundMe that did it, pull in you know, millions of bucks.
Nationally,
but they had
a
goal of raising $1 billion, and they were never going to raise $1 billion.
Nope. Item number two, the U.S. Senate race on the Dem side. Grant Woods went on a Phoenix radio station. In fact, I think Joe and Dylan, it's the same Phoenix radio station, KTAR, where I believe he did a radio talk show for I don't know how long, maybe a couple of years or anyway. But he made an announcement he is not a candidate after his exploratory effort. He's decided on Facebook, he didn't want to spend the next year and a half running against other Democrats?
Yeah, he said there are plenty of other Democrats who are going to jump into the race. Grant mm-hmm. Woods, a former Republican AG in this state, a former John McCain confidant, is now a Democrat and was thinking of running. Now he's said he's not going to. And as you touched on a little bit, there's a reason he's not going to run.
And Joe Ferguson, what's the reason?
Well, I think that he's been hounded by local activists here who have taken him to task for some of the things he said on that radio program. They did the work and they really dug into those statements, and they just didn't reflect well when they were brought to light in today's kind of Me Too era.
Could you give us kind of an example of maybe one of the things that was said?
Well, I mean, I'm pulling from memory now,
just
but I mean,
the general area of concern.
He mocked a rape victim.
Okay.
And, you know, said a number of sexist, I guess, would be a fairly accurate description of things about women politicians. And,
okay.
The things that a lot of people end up saying on the radio to be provocative and to get attention do not play well if you want to be a community leader. They're two different tasks. And, Grant Woods basically said some things that if he wanted to be a politician were stupid things to say.
All right. Item three, your colleague Tim Steller, our friend at the Star, Pima County Road Repair Plan will be a tough sell to the public. Joe Ferguson, are you ready with a second to that?
I can't agree more. I think it's already been universally badmouthed by any resident of Tucson who's concerned about paying tax dollars to pave a road in unincorporated Pima County. I think Chuck has an argument that he's making as the county administrator, but it just didn't sell very well. I think it was dead on arrival.
What do you think, Dylan?
We're really getting down to the bottom of the bucket for ideas about what to do about our roads. And nobody seems to have a great plan that's saleable both to enough people on the Board of Supervisors to get it approved or to the voters at large.
But I think we saw a little bit of that today when we had the minority leader on this afternoon in terms of assistant minority leader, where we talked about the gas tax, because I think that that actually addresses one of the problems that they're mm-hmm. having is that the revenue that we're collecting from gas taxes simply isn't enough for the number of roads that are here in Pima County or anywhere else in the state in terms of that number. It's a lopsided proposal at the end of the day, and it's part of the reason why we are where we are today.
We're looking at a baseline of an early 90s funding stream from that gas tax, and then the legislature is, keeps siphoning it off for other things other than road repair, and those things combined are one of the factors, not the only factor, but one of the major factors for why we are in the fix we're in.
I can add another item to my agenda here, item number four. Joe, you wrote briefly about the city. They had a budget retreat. I think it was last week. We had Paul Cunningham on the program, councilman this week. Generally, Joe, from what you've seen, kind of an early blueprint of the spending plan for the city, what's your takeaway message?
I think that there is going to be a political fight, and it's going to be an ugly one in an election year about how to spend what looks like about a 3% increase in the sales tax. And there is a push and pull between what the voters want and what staff says that it needs to keep running the ship in an efficient manner, which would be raises for frontline personnel.
Randy Dorman, a downtown Tucson developer and kind of downtown activist, will be announcing Dylan, I think, early this week. Next week, excuse me.
She's running for mayor.
She filed last week.
So she's doing the work, hiring some folks to help run her campaign.
Three-way race.
Getting her on the ballot.
Three-way race on the Dem side. We do have an independent, Mr. Ackerley. Ed Ackerley is involved. So just what are some of your thoughts quickly about a three-way race? Does Ms. Dorman take votes away from Rahina Romero or from Steve Farley or what?
She's kind of the X factor right mm-hmm. now in the race. She's going to have to really get out there and convince people that she stands for something in a different way than the two other candidates who are more known quantities. People have voted for the other two or voted against them before. And, people who are involved in politics know much more where the Steve Farley and Raheena Romero stand than where Randy Dorman stands. And she's going to have to, do a little bit more work to get out there what she wants to do, why she's running.
And honestly, I think that both Steve and Raheena have powerful political machines behind them. And I think that's going to be something that Randy Dorman is going to have a little more trouble emulating. So, there is a built-in constituency for these two Democrats who have run for office and have, large, deep ties to the political machine of Tucson.
All right. We'll have Raheena Romero on the program Thursday, and I think the 28th of February, we've scheduled Randy Dorman. We had Steve Farley a week or so back, and that's just the first go-round with these candidates. And who knows? We've got three positions here now in the all-new and the all-new 1030 The Voice Starship.
You got some false advertising going on here. This is not a reporter's round table, because this table's not round.
What
at
would
all.
You call it?
It's kind of a
half moon, or
the big kind of a V. You're sitting there, in the apex, in the power position there.
Kitchen. How about the 1030 kitchen table talk?
Well, there you go.
Okay.
Well, roundtable's
right.
Still a good
there
tag,
you go.
But we just got to be straight up and honest and straightforward, transparent. It's not a roundtable.
Certainly
table,
do. Dylan Smith, thank you, Dylan. We'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Joe Ferguson, anything in the Star that you would like to promote?
My colleague Perla has built a wonderful series ahead of the February 15th vote in Congress, explaining the historical discussions and fights over a border wall here in southern Arizona. It's a must not miss in Sunday's paper.
All right, we'll look for that. Dylan and Joe, thank you very much.
Adios.
Dan Gibson, A Visit Tucson, filling in the shoes of the vacationing Matt Russell, who's over filling in, actually, on the sand, so I guess sand in his sandals. We'll have a weekend watch. That's next on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, I'm Ryan Hansen, and we are excited to announce that our annual travel showcase has a new location, new presentations, and exciting new offers. Sunday, February 24th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador, we'll have over 40 travel representatives offering a presentation and your chance to learn about where they go, who they are, and their exciting offers. I will also be presenting an unfiltered look at travel topics, so you do not want to miss the 2019 Travel Showcase from Bon Voyage.
Stirred up, baby. It's Weekend Watch time. Weekend Watch presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive to a beautiful portion of the southwestern United States. Road trip, anybody? Why not now? Pile in the car, head over to Silver City, enjoy a great weekend, hike in the Gila National Wilderness. Spring comes early to that part of the world, and it's going to be so beautiful with all the wildflowers and everything else. So go to southwestnewmexico.org for the starting place for great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities. We've got a lot of recreation opportunities and good eating recommendations coming your way from Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson, who is filling in, I was going to say shoes, but the sandals, the beach sandals for Matt Russell, who's over enjoying a little bit of Maui. How are you, sir?
The man takes a lot of vacations. Good for him. You know, they don't let me leave at Visit Tucson. I'm here all the time. I have no, you know, where else would I go?
Well, you need to be there because everybody's calling in from back east saying, I want to get out of that cold, snowy area. So it's going to be a great
full year.
Yeah.
For better or for worse, we're full this week. Tucson cannot take any more visitors. So next week, perfect.
Yep. This is a big week. All right. Weekend, give us your top three.
Well, it's Arizona Beer Week, Bill. So, I mean, I think that's an excellent time to get out there and taste the magnificent products of our local brewers who are doing an excellent job. Let's get it going tonight, Friday, February 8th, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Tap and Bottle North, which is over at Oracle and Ina. It's the best of Baja, Arizona. Selections from Button Brewhouse, Tombstone, Dragoon. The brewers will be in the house. You can learn about all the magnificent things they're making. Some of my favorite Southern Arizona beers come from Tombstone, so if you haven't checked those out, it's an excellent opportunity to do so. This Saturday, that's tomorrow, second annual Beads, Blues, and Beer Festival is a synergy of your gem show and local drinking interests from, why not, right? At Metal Arts Village, it benefits Beads of Courage. They'll have blues bands from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., food trucks, vendors. You can make some bead stuff if you want. There's going to be shopping, wearable art. I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds exciting. Mm. And the Bead Artist Hall of Fame presentation at 7 p.m., which is a new life goal for me, to get in that Bead Artist Hall of Fame. So something to look forward to.
And that's over at the Metal Village off of Fort Lowell, correct?
Yes, Fort Lowell and Dodge, I think, is the intersection. Yeah. Great fun over there. Tons of stuff to do. Lots of local art to see. You can get a tattoo if you want. Tucson's best tattoo artist is in there.
So all right, so
make the most of it.
We're heavy on the beer and the beads. How about your number one pick for the weekend?
This is my number one pick for the week, and it's not just because my wife works at the Humane Society. Well, it is. It's almost entirely because of that. Sunday, February 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 1055 downtown. Excellent sausages and beers. They will have adoptable dogs, so you can pet a lovely, cute dog on the 1055 patio. Also, $1 from every pint goes to the Humane Society. So, I mean, what more could you possibly ask for? You gotta try their brats there by local sausage artist Ben Forbes. Shockingly, a vegan chorizo they have there at 1055. Super delicious.
Certainly a beer-themed Weekend Watch there from Dan Gibson. Thank you very much,
Dan. What I have on my mind on a Friday.
There you go. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. Thank you very much. Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Original theme music for the Buckmaster Show, composed by our German friend, Christophan from Munich, Germany. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, the entire team at KVOI, Bustos Media, including Bob Dio on the other side of the glass. Coming up, Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. I'm Bill Buckmaster on behalf of everybody here. Have a great weekend.